And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, Ezra struggles with unanswered questions from the past on Empire Day. He has teenage angst, and he's sad, and he's upset. And it's his birthday, and no one bought him presents! While the Ghost crew uncovers the key to an Imperial intel. We're talking about Empire Day this week. How you doing, Chris?
It's emo Ezra this week.
I like to call it Harry Potter fifth year Ezra.
Oh, yeah.
Aww. Blue waffle virus, doctor. I miss you. But yeah, it was fun. I really liked this episode.
I did too.
My feelings on it is like, I definitely was not a fan of it the first time I watched it. And I think I have a note about it. But I like now that I have a better appreciation for Ezra, I liked it a lot more. But I have notes about Ezra.
He was a little annoying in the beginning, I thought.
Well, yeah, he's a teenager. What can you do? I'm a teenager.
Listen to you. You're like, you like him now.
Back in the day,
you would have been like, yeah, screw that kid.
I think if we were doing it every day when it was coming out, I'd be a lot more negative at Ezra at this point. Because I was. I was at the time. And I said it before, and I'll say it again, a big reason why I've come to appreciate Ezra was, A, watching the entire show in its entirety, B, my buddies over at Kiki Bubbles, who used to be Rebels chat, and John and Marie loved Ezra from the get-go, and so she and her ma were both, like, really, like, defending him and explaining it, and it was the one where ma talked about how Ezra's a teenager, and they're writing him like a teenager. It's like, I just said, Harry Potter Year 5, like, Harry Potter Year 5, Harry Potter's written to be 15 years old, and it's accurate, but I, as an adult, it's not my favorite thing to read, because I already lived through that. I don't want to go through it again. It's actually really well done writing for Ezra's age. It's just, sometimes it's just like, and there's some very, very tropey things in this episode, which I did put into my notes, and I'll talk about later.
Oh, yeah.
Super tropey things. But how was your week?
Not bad. Pretty non-eventful, which is a good thing lately.
We might get snow tomorrow.
Yeah, we've had plenty here.
Well, like, it never snows in Georgia, so this is a big fucking deal. But it's only going to snow for, like, maybe an hour, and then it's going to
I was just going to say, enjoy your 10 minutes of it anyway.
I'll be at work, so I'll probably just, like, open the blinds and just stare at it as I bag comics and just look out at it longingly. I'm actually slightly, on one hand, I'm slightly hoping that my...
I like that.
I'm slightly hoping that my boss will be like, don't worry about coming to work today. My kids are out of school. But on the other hand, I'm going on a trip in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So I was like, I kind of need the money. So
that sounds like if you were a monster and were in a hope or a horror movie, it would be the hopening.
The hopening. Yeah, but... Oh, man, though. I sent Chris pictures, but I went to the absolute coolest house ever. It just had just so many Star Wars decorations. And I sent Chris all these pictures. The best thing, it was a shelf that was cut out to look like the Death Star under construction. And it was a Funko Pop shelf. And they had LED lights behind it that changed colors. And it was amazing.
It was very classy.
It was very classy. Like, it didn't scream like, this is a nerd room, because it was done in a way that it looked like a shelf that could be like an artsy kind of shelf. But when you look at it, you're like, that's a Death Star.
It was low key, but at the same time, it managed to be very nerdy because it was just a lot of nerdy stuff. But the presentation of it didn't look nerdy upon first look at, if you were just looking at it and not paying attention to what was on the shelves or anything, it's just like, oh, they've got some knickknacks and pictures up and stuff. But yeah, it was very tastefully done.
Yeah. That was my buddy's Francine's house, and I got to play my the first Nintendo Switch I ever played. I've never played a Nintendo Switch, and it was a lot of fun. Because I really super duper want one, and once I get a new car, that's the next thing I'm saving up for my life. Oh, by the way, and this is several weeks late, I just want to say I got the sweetest card from Brian Weber congratulating on us for finishing Clone Wars and starting Rebels. So even though you're hearing this several weeks late, Brian, because we record so far in advance, thank you so much. It was cool because it was Commander Cody sitting on the Iron Throne, but the Iron Throne was made out of blasters. And it said a Game of Clones under it.
Oh, jeez.
I sent you a picture of it.
I don't remember that part. I saw the text of it. I saw, like, the text party wrote. I might not have clicked on it and seen the cover of it.
It was probably the one above it because I sent you the image first and then I sent you the text, but... Yeah, I just want to say thank you, Brian. I got your card, even though I've already thanked you on Facebook and messaged you. But still, it was really cool, and thank you so much. And just so you know, Brian, I sent that picture to my best friend, Megan, and Megan showed her husband, and her husband then bought a shirt that had the Game of Clones thrown on it. So you helped a person buy a shirt by sending me that card and started a chain event to support an artist. Awesome.
That's how it works.
Yep. But outside of the party, I've had a pretty chill week. I've just been busy because I had a house party on Saturday. I'm going to a birthday party this Saturday. The following weekend, I have to go to a baby shower. And the weekend after that, I'm going out of town. And I'm just like, wow, I have no weekends in February now.
I've just been doing a lot of editing and recording.
Yeah, on the Super Bowl in Atlanta on Sunday. Super Bowl. See, I like watching for the commercials and... Normally the halftime show, but I don't like Maroon 5, so fuck that. So they are going to have, like, half of Outkast, though, so it's always fun to have, like, very classic Atlanta bands being there, and I'm really hoping Big Boy makes an appearance so then we can have Outkast back together for one whole song!
All I care about the Super Bowl is they're not showing the Episode 9 trailer.
They're not?
They're not. Disney decided not to pay the money for a Super Bowl trailer, which I think is smart. They don't need to.
Yeah, I know, but
they just need to drop it on the internet. That's all they need to do.
I would actually find it really funny if they dropped it on the internet during the Super Bowl and it got more views than the Super Bowl.
It would. It would get just. It's gonna get just as many views as it's gonna get whether it's on the Super Bowl. Yeah, everybody, anybody who cares is gonna not as much go to the, you know, I don't think people are gonna watch the Super Bowl to see the Episode 9 thing when they know it's gonna be on YouTube in 10 seconds after it's on the Super Bowl. So
yeah, I'm gonna watch it anyway. I have a mild okay tolerance for football. It's not my favorite sports, but I will watch it if it's on. I'd just be like, yay, oh, sport. And anything to watch the fucking Patriots go down 3 weeks later. I'm going to probably regret saying this because this comes out late, but fuck the Patriots.
I don't know who none of them people are.
They're the people who beat Atlanta 28-3 2 years ago, and they never let it down. In fact, the Saints. So maybe I care a little bit more about football than I admit to.
I guess so.
I'm probably going to regret this saying this. So, Chris... Edit in something if the Patriots win of saying like, haha, hope sucks right here.
Okay, I'll try to.
That's your reminder to look up the score of the Super Bowl to edit in like,
I know,
haha,
I'm
hope
to
was
Google
wrong.
It to find out who won. You laugh, but I probably am.
I know. All right, I'm gonna put down my cross stitching. You ready to get into this episode?
I am.
And take a sip of my drink. And yeah, I also bought, like, real cream soda the other day, so I don't have any more cream soda anymore like I did.
Cream soda?
You called it that.
What?
You called it cream soda, and I started using that. But, all right, ready?
I am ready.
Empire Day is the 8th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on November 17th, 2014. It was written by Henry Gilroy and directed by Stephen G. Lee. Some extra information for you. Dee Bradley Baker, who is the voice of our lovely clones in the Clone Wars, is the voice of both Old Joe and Ezra's father, Ephraim Bridger. Excuse me. His other works include, pretty much if you've seen any cartoon ever made, Dee Bradley Baker's in it at some point. Just look out. He's been in, like, every cartoon ever, so...
That's his official IMDb entry.
Pretty much any recent cartoon that's made, he's made an appearance. I think Dee's list is something crazy, like 400 entries. Like, I remember, like, a year or two ago, I think it was Star Wars Twitter, they were congratulating him on, like, his 400th or 500th show entry on IMDb or something. It was insane. Maybe that's a little high. Maybe it was closer to 300, but it's still a lot. Like, if you've seen a recent television show... That's a cartoon. Dee Bradley Baker was in it at some point. I mean, he's goddamn Lion in Steven Universe. And Avatar The Last Airbender, he's Momo and Appa. And, like, he's so good with creatures. So if there's a creature, it's probably Dee. Anyway, Katie Soucy, who voices Minister Tua in this episode, is also the voice of Ezra's mother, Mira Bridger. Peter MacNicol, I like that name, MacNicol, is the voice of Sibo. His other works include Ally McBeal, Veep, Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, and Numbers. The small outpost where Old Joe's pit stop is a city very, very informally called Jotel. So then I actually wondered if, like, it's called Jotel just because Old Joe's place is there and it's, like, the only cool place, so he got the city named after him. I don't know. Old Joe's pit stop recycles a lot of Clone Wars era junk, including what appears to be the nose of a gunship called the Crumb Bomber, and Joe claims that it's authentic. Rather than show him as he is today, the file hollow of Papa Palpatine in the television, this is when they're running the propaganda, shows a picture of Papa Palpatine, and it depicts him when he was young and handsome. This is a very common practice of tyrants using state-run media. When they're watching the news in Joe's shop, there's a news ticker running along the bottom of the broadcast in Erebesh. The news ticker tells the story of the tragic story of the Boo Boo farm residents who were attacked and killed by rabid loth cats. For the Imperial...
Not blown up by the Empire at all.
They're attacked by rabid... Yeah, it's that little, like, news ticker that's running across the bottom in yellow while they're watching the news. And it's, like, talking about these people who were killed by rabid loth cats. So... For the Imperial Anthem during the parade, Kevin Kiner composed an upbeat parade ground version of the Imperial March. In an early draft of the story, a human friend of the Bridger family named Cobb Tyr would have brought Sibo into Ezra's life, but as the story evolved, his character was combined with Sibo's. Also, Sibo is speaking Hatties. The dialogue was written out in English first and then translated for the show by Pablo Hidalgo. In Rebels Recon, they talk some about the average citizen of the Empire. They explain that at the end of the Clone Wars, the foundation of the Empire was a celebrated thing. But over time, it comes in to represent fear. They go on to explain that people are realizing the promise of stability and protection from the Empire means losing freedoms they had before. It is also law that citizens were required to attend the Empire Day Parade, which is why some of the people didn't look too happy to be there. Also in Rebels Recon, Pablo Hidalgo used to run the website HoloNet News for StarWars.com. So when it came to Rebels, he knew that he wanted media to play a big role in Rebels, meaning like news media and the propaganda and stuff. He wanted to show different broadcasts of people's different perspective on what the Empire was. That's it. Like, that's actually one of my favorite parts of this episode is just them watching, like, yeah, it could have been easily like... Just using a real world example, it could be like CNN or Fox News or like CNBC, like any of those. And depending on which one you're watching, it would be like a different perspective on like one event. And I like that. It kind of has that nice real world tie into it. It just really depends on who's talking about it. So I like that. You know who also likes to talk about the news?
The news. Awesome. Much happiness spread by the news. Mm-hmm.
I feel like you'd be one of those people who, like, you know, 10 o'clock rolls around, you sit back in your rocking chair after a day of creeping on young girls all day, and you just sit back and watch the news.
Yoda doesn't creep.
He welcomes and charms.
Mm-hmm. The gentleman Yoda is.
Do you watch the news to see if you're on it?
Mm-hmm. Google Yoda's name, I do 500 times a day. Terrible things I see on image search. Terrible things.
That's funny, because that actually goes with our question for you today, Yoda.
Sure.
So, Gene Hendricks sent us a picture, and it's a picture of you. And it says, in case you didn't know, Yoda's last name is Lehehu. And Gene's question for you is, Yoda, is it true that your last name is Lehehu?
Very silly person you are, Gene Hendricks.
Oh my god, Yoda, I have a request. Please do the song, but in a Yoda voice, because we're talking about Gene.
Gene.
That's awful, thank you. Go on.
Yoda will reveal his real name for the first time here.
Okay, well, let me give you a drum roll. Ready?
Ready? Yoda's last name is Man-Now-Dog.
Man-O-Dog?
Mm-hmm. Yoda Man-Now-Dog.
You're the Man-Now-Dog.
I like it. You are the man, Yoda.
Mama Man-Now-Dog gave me good name.
Oh my god. Yoda best. Yoda man.
Yoda doesn't get it.
Yoda woman? Do Yoda want a woman? Okay, I'm losing it. Thanks, Yoda.
There he goes.
Actually, I was wondering about that. Is that a fan thing with his last name being Lehehu? Do you know?
It's a yodel. Yodel-Lehehu.
Oh.
See, it's a joke.
Lehehu. I've just never heard it before, and I was just like, maybe it was something from Legends that I missed.
Nope. It's just a silly joke about yodels. And his name's Yoda. And
yep. Well, I wish I would have known that then. I didn't get the joke, so I was just like, Lehehu. And so I would have been like, Yoda is your name. Yoda Lehehu.
It's vaguely Scandinavian.
I would have totally played it out more. I didn't get the joke, Gene. Damn it. You should have been like, hope yodel it.
And don't blame Gene.
Damn it, Gene.
Ooh, that's a pin right there. Don't blame Gene.
That's true, Gene, and we love you so much. Gene, I love you, and you're the best. Damn it, Chris, you should have told me it was a joke.
I thought you would know it was a joke. That's what pictures like that on the internet, they call them memes, Hope. They're usually jokes.
How is the old guy explaining to the young person a meme?
I can't answer that question.
But now that I'm like, I know it, like, I can't unsee it, I'm like, oh yeah, it's totally a meme. Yodel-Lehehu.
Every day as I'm surrounded by young people, I always have to stop and ask myself, how the hell are you so much more hipper and with it than these young whippersnappers?
Yeah, I get that. I get that. I have a friend who's a little bit younger. And
these little shavers.
Yeah, I have a friend that's a little shaver, and this person, I don't mind. Let me say this. I don't mind. They call and ask me for advice, but, like, the advice is always about, like, drama, and I usually end the advice of, like, why does that matter? And the answer is usually, like, it doesn't. And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't. You're fine.
I ask people a lot of times, why do you care? You know? I remember this one girl at work that used to complain, you know, whatever. She was not like a manager or anything. She was just a paid employee, but she was just like, why don't I have this authority and that authority? And I'm like, you could have all that authority. They're going to pay you the same amount of money. So why do you care? Come in and do your hours and get your money. Why do you care? I guess that's a good point, but they couldn't help but not care.
Care. I think it's a very, because I don't judge, because I know when I was that age, I did the same thing too. And like, I feel like, because when you're younger, and this actually kind of ties into Ezra a little bit. So this is actually good for this episode.
And I also remember at that age, totally discounting anybody my age said to me.
Yeah.
Until later on. So I just say it, and then I just don't expect it to have any positive response to it. But I say it anyway, because I know, like, a decade down the line, it maybe it'll come in handy. Probably not. But
and when you're that age, like, you feel like you have a lot of experience and you don't have the grander, bigger scheme of, like, you don't really have that much experience. So it really does feel like you know what's going on. And right. Like,
you think you're really hot, but you're really not.
And a lot of it is just, like, you feel like you have all the experiences you needed and to handle it. And then when it doesn't go your way, like, it's just a new experience that you're learning. So I understand, because I was the exact same way when I was that age, which is a lot of how Ezra's kind of acting in this episode. He's actually quite mature in a way, dealing with a lot of really heavy adult mature shit. And he's 15 trying to figure out how to deal with very, very adult shit. So I actually don't blame him for being a bit moody this episode, because he's 15 years old dealing with thinking his parents are dead, it's Empire Day, and he's a rebel, and he's learning how to be a Jedi. He's dealing with a lot of shit for a 15-year-old, so I actually don't really blame Ezra for being a bit moody this time around.
Oh, no, I'll get more into that in my notes. I got notes on that. Oh, I got notes on that.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that, like, I don't have that many, like, super deep notes. All my notes are relatively shallow because I'm surprised.
I have mostly shallow notes, but there are a lot more of them than I usually have, especially in the first part. For some reason, the first part, I was just scribbling notes like crazy.
Yeah. Well, you ready to get into it?
I am.
All right, let me take a sip of my drink. All right, ready?
Yep.
You just said you are, so.
I am. Why do I have to say it again, Hope?
Because I'm repetitive. Act one!
I'm ready.
We open with our heroes hanging out at an outpost called Jodel. Hera, Sabine, and Zeb go into the town, while Kanan and Ezra hang back in the plains for some Jedi training. Kanan throws a rock into the grass, and it pisses off a lock cat, but he's trying to teach Ezra how to connect with beings. The angry pussycat attacks Ezra, and Ezra's like, "Oh boy, let me get a lightsaber, and I'll make it connect." And Kanan's like, "Well now, that's like season 3 territory that we're crossing into, but no, you're not gonna do that." And Kanan says that he has to let his guard down and has to think about others and not just protect himself. And the kitty is all nice when Kanan makes his connection. Kanan notes that there's something wrong with Ezra today and asks what's up. And Ezra explains that it's Empire Day, which is for some reason a really bad day for him. And just so everybody knows, Empire Day is a holiday where the Empire was founded 15 years ago. So you know that Papa Palpatine is probably having a party in his castle and he's drinking some wine and making Vader wear a silly hat. Anyway, excuse me, a few TIE fighters fly overhead, and our heroes race back into town to see what's up. They go to Old Joe's bar, where Hera and Zeb are looking not suspicious, and Kanan and Ezra go to the bar. And they watch as 3 TIE fighter pilots search the bar until they find a Rodian, and checking him against a picture of another Rodian. And Ezra sees the picture and goes, "Holy shit, is that Sebo?" And they determine that the Rodian isn't who they're looking for, and the pilots go up to Old Joe. And they demand the Imperial Holonet should be playing at all times by law. And Joe turns it on, and the news is like, "Hooray, Papa Palpatine! We love Papa Palpatine! The Empire is awesome! And there's gonna be a parade! And nothing is wrong. Everything is fine in the Empire. There is no problems." And then the news cuts, and we see, I think from 3 episodes ago, the image of Gaul Travis. And just to remind everyone, he's a politician who is in hiding from the Empire and has secret transmissions and news for the rebels. And Travis is calling for everyone to boycott Empire Day. And the TIE fighter pilot wants the TV to be shut down. But Joe, old Joe, whips out his best 90s anime laugh. And I really just wanted an excuse to do a 90s anime laugh. And old Joe goes, "Oh!" You can't see it, but I'm holding the back of my hand to my chin, and my hands are splayed across my face as I go, "Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo! I can't shut off the television. You said it has to be on by law 30 seconds ago. Anyway, and the pilots get fed up and leave. Kanan asks what's up. I really just wanted an excuse to do an old 90s anime laugh. I really did.
I figured.
I love it. It's fine. One of my favorite tropes.
That's fine.
Like,
it's you're you write it. You get
I love
yourself.
The old 90s anime laughs. They're my favorite. Kanan asks what's up, and old Joe says that the entire planet is under blockade, and all spaceports are shut down. Also, they're apparently after some Rodian. But our heroes are planning to fuck up the Empire Parade, but Ezra gets a sudden case of protagonist-itis, and he chooses not to be involved with it. And he is having feelings and memories. And the rest of the space family is concerned. Ezra goes back to his old home, the abandoned radio tower, just outside of Lothal's capital city. I have no idea how he got there. I guess he rode on the ghost and was like, bye guys. He's all sad and mopey and wondering why the Empire is looking for SIBO. He takes a chip-like looking thing out of a box. Remember the chip-like thing? And then you hear the woo, 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 woo of the Force before Ezra starts hearing his parents' voices. They give him a pep talk about sticking it to the Empire. And Ezra realizes that he knows where SIBO is. What'd you think of Act 1?
It was good. I have a question.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I didn't notice it during watching it, but the wanted picture they had of SIBO, did it have the sort of Lobot-like thing on his head?
No.
See, I couldn't tell how they would go, nope, it's not you, because...
Well, SIBO was yellow.
I hate to say that all Rodians look alike to me. Well, but...
The thing is like, they were looking... SIBO is yellow, and they were looking at green Rodians, and all they have to do is go, he's not yellow, move along.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think there's a bit of speciesism in the Empire where they're like, he's yellow. I think there's just a bit of speciesism in the Empire where they're
maybe they wanted to get close enough to see if they had green makeup on or something.
Yeah.
There was a shot of three TIEs landing vertically that was really neat, I thought.
Yeah.
And I like how the guy, like, there were like two or three different voices in the propaganda one, but the one main guy, like, had a kind of Palpatine little bit of meh to his voice. Well, he still had another voice.
That's Steve Bloom. That's Steve Bloom. He's the voice of Zeb. He's the voice of that guy. He's actually voiced, we've seen a couple Imperial propaganda ones. The character's name is Alton Castle. And he's voiced by Steve Bloom, which is Zeb's voice actor.
Well, I like that they give him a little bit of Palpatine's mwah, to it, which is, of course they would. Of course they would ape the dictator a little bit.
But just a quick thing, the character's name is Alton Castle, and he's a human male journalist who worked as a broadcaster on Holonet News for the planet of Lothal. And he helps spread propaganda for the Galactic Empire, including propaganda about Wookiees and local unemployment rates.
I like the bartender is one of those hammerhead creatures that talk in weird, like, sound vibrations, so he's got just sort of like a translator thing.
They actually had especially designed that for this show, because they realized that because I think they're called Ithorians, and previously, before this episode, they had the translator in, I think, one other episode of something. But it was because of Rebels, they were like, oh, we can't just have this character not talking in basic. So they actually designed the translator, I think, for this episode. I'm about 99% positive that's true. So,
couple musical notes. There's a lot of Yoda's theme popping up in here, which is weird. Because Yoda's not in it, but Yoda's theme pops up in it. And the jaunty parade Empire music kind of makes a little return in Solo too, because there's that one. What's that?
Say the last part again. I'm sorry.
When Han Solo in the Solo movie, when Han Solo is signing up for the Empire, that they're basically playing jaunty Imperial march in the background.
Mm-hmm.
The same sort of propaganda version of it. I like how we're starting to see like what life on the ground under the Empire is.
Yeah, like the everyday life. Like, I like how everyone's just kind of chill in the bar until the Imperials show up, and then the entire bar is just tense.
And I like that.
The exchange with Old Joe, too, where he's like, you need to be playing this news channel. And he's like, why? We've never played it. He's like, it's the law. And then he's like, you need to turn this off. He's like, I'm sorry, it's the law.
Yep, just the standard. Everybody hates the dictator, but the drunk stormtrooper. He looked like he was drunk anyway, coming in just trying to push everybody around. The only other minor note I liked the parentheses wing tie. I guess that was pretty cool, but I don't know why. Like, it's such a big. It's just like the guys at the top. Designers at TIE Labs are just like, you know, what are, they're just going through whatever different shapes they can think of for
Are you talking about the Grand Inquisitor's TIE?
Are
you talking about the Grand Inquisitor's TIE fighter?
The one that they're just like in, you know, where the Empire reveals its new TIE fighter, the one they blow up.
That's Act Two.
Oh, okay. Never mind. And my only other note is we're getting a little bit of Ezra, like Ahsoka. We're seeing a little bit of his, you know, basically PTSD. You know, we're getting a little, you know, insight into, it was pretty traumatic, his separation from his parents, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like Ahsoka. He's thrust into an adult war at a young age. Less prepared than Ahsoka.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of have a note about that, too. I sort of do. It's kind of in the same reason of that.
That's all I got, though, for...
My first note is Ezra's big ability that we see throughout the show is his ability to have empathy, for one. He's very empathetic towards people and, like, wanting to give people multiple chances. But we also see that he has ability to connect with animals. Like, we see it with the Purrgil, they're the big one. We'll see it, I think, next week's episode, I think it is, with the Gundark, or the Fear Knots, Knock Fears, whatever they're called.
Yeah, I think he wasn't interested in it till it happens, and then he was like, whoa, dude.
Yeah, and so I really like, because that's his big power, but I like in this opening scene that it wasn't something that he was fighting against. It wasn't completely natural for him, and he has to learn the ability. And it ends up becoming his most important ability of the entire series. But it takes him going through this and having to learn how to open up. And he has to learn how to connect with things because he's been closed off since he's lost his parents. And he hasn't been wanting to get hurt. And that's the whole point of this episode, is him having to learn how to open back up. And it's done really well with him, like, trying, like, failing to connect with this cat, but because of what we see later in the episode with, like, Sibo and, like, Kanan talking to him and stuff like that, we'll start seeing him open up more to have this main ability of his that we'll see for the rest of the series. So I like the fact that in this opening act, it's not natural to him because he's closed himself off for 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, PTSD.
Yeah. I also totally forgot about the line where Ezra is like, give me your lightsaber and I'll kill the Loth Cat. And I'm like, whoa, that's season 3, Ezra. Back it up.
No, he's... Kanan didn't have to use the Force to figure out that he was in a grumpy teen mood, that's for sure.
Yeah. We kind of already touched on it a little bit, but I really do like how they use media in this opening act with, like, the news playing. There's a lot of real world nods to how state run governments do work and spew propaganda, which we see a lot even in our current world. And it's also has the counter when Gall Travis starts talking and he's like, you need to boycott Empire Day and not go. That's also a very real world thing of, like, if you disagree with this, you know, boycott it. So there's a lot of, like, kind of real world nods, especially a lot with our current day state of things. It was really kind of cool seeing it kind of tie in. And we've talked about that before, where Star Wars is so broadly done to where anything could easily be tied back into our current world. And people can be like, oh, yeah, that's in... The one that I think about the most was when we covered... Oh, what episode was it? It was the episode of Clone Wars where Padme had to give the speech, but Ahsoka thought she was going to be assassinated and Aurra Sing was in it. And Padme gave this very rousing speech that was almost verbatim Elizabeth Warren's speech at the time. And I was like, whoa, that's almost verbatim. It's close. And it's just, it's so broadly done that you can just tie it
in. Right. And by the time we were doing it, it had been out for a few years. So
yeah,
it wasn't inspired by Elizabeth Warren's speech, but it's the kind of speech that someone like that would give.
Yeah. So. And like with the news running for the Empire, it could be something as compared to current day China to 1930s Germany.
That George Lucas, like, pulled both visually and just thematically from World War II for this movie is, like, for Star Wars. I mean, the Nazis had stormtroopers, you know, so it wasn't super he wasn't being super cagey about hiding, you know, the references to it. But yeah, I mean, that's he used the hero's journey and stuff like that. And I mean, when you do stories of that, like, mythological resonance, it's like Harry Potter too, you know?
Yeah, very much so. There's like so much propaganda.
There's a whole generation of people who read Harry Potter who are, you know, like, or, you know, they are seeing the umbrages out there, you know, because they read Harry Potter when they were, you know, young kids. So
yeah, I mean, even now, like, you could look at a lot of the propaganda that the Empire is doing and compare it to, like, either real world North Korea or real current day China. Like, there's a lot of similarities.
Yep.
And it's so broadly done that you could compare it to any of those things.
Yep.
So.
I'll bet you probably, yeah, like, North Korea probably has the most propaganda of all the propagandas in the world. I'll bet you theirs is, they're like, state-run TV's got to be crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe that's going to be my new rabbit hole, is try to find, like, actual, like, state North Korea TV footage on YouTube. That would be great.
I remember watching this news thing about how people are actually trying to smuggle in, like, prominent, like, American movies into North Korea as DVDs to, like, bring people, like, outside world stuff. And it's actually, like, a big black market thing to just smuggle in, like, a Nicolas Cage movie.
Yeah, there's no way to keep that stuff out, you know, not these days. You know, somebody could have a shoe with a hard drive hidden in it with, you know, 1,000 movies in it.
Yeah, just to get, so they can get, like, stuff that wasn't state run. So anyway, my next note is, and you kind of talked about this too, the TIE pilots are kind of scary here. They're pointing guns at people and forcing them to celebrate and, like, demanding that they need to raise their glasses to the Empire and demanding that the news needs to play at all times. And, like, it could be easily played off as comical, but it's also kind of scary to see, like, the Empire is forcing people to be like, do you love the Empire? Gun pointed at them. Yeah, I love the Empire. Don't shoot me.
Well, that's the thing, is that's what's scary about that guy, is he's a TIE fighter pilot, so he's like a low level, you know, guy, but he's with the Empire. He's wearing his full uniform to a bar, which he doesn't have to. It was a nice character, because there wasn't much to him, but you could, you know, read a lot into him. He was that guy that, like, he wants to push his power around, so he's in a bar where he's the only Imperial, so he's, you know, he doesn't have anybody outranking him there, and he outranks everybody, so he pushes everybody around. And the minute he's not getting, like, they sort of, like, play it, like, real close to the edge with him, because he could probably make the bar's life miserable if he wanted to.
Yeah.
But he's also seems like he's a little, like, half drunk too. So,
well, it is Empire Day. It's like the equivalent.
Right. Yeah. And he's out power tripping, and he was probably like, I could push these guys around more. I could, like, call the cops on them or whatever, but I'll just go to another bar and push them around there too, you know?
Yeah.
Off he goes.
We got another shout out to Governor Price, and I just can't wait to see Arinda in season 3. Ari! Yay, Arinda! I can't wait. And I remember my last note is, and I kind of talked about this a little bit. I remember why I didn't like this episode as much the first time, because Ezra is super protagonist-y. And what I mean is, like, he is just playing all the tropes of a standard protagonist. And it's not like, and I said, it's done well for his age and stuff like that, but there are just certain tropes.
It's very Disney animation.
And it's
really,
it's kind of overdone. Like, a lot of the, like, protagonist hero tropes. I mean, he's pretty much Luke in the beginning of A New Hope. Like, I want to go racing with my friends.
That was my big complaint with this, is everybody was just sort of a light version of a character, or a combination of characters from A New Hope, you know, and put in a more cyclical story formula. So yeah, but that's the thing, now that we have the big picture, we're also seeing where this is going, and we're seeing the little hints there throwing to the future in there that we probably didn't catch as much before.
Yeah. And I'll be the first to say, like, I made this mistake a lot very early Rebels, and I learned to stop doing it. And I'm glad that I've learned to stop doing this, because if I was applying it to Resistance, I'd be liking Resistance way less than I'm doing. And the mistake I made very early Rebels was I was constantly comparing Ezra to Ahsoka. And the thing is like, because they do have some similarities. They're both Padawans. They're both learning. They're both young. They're both in a war. But that's about where it stops. They're very different people. And I kept comparing Ezra to Ahsoka to the point of like, well, he should be knowing this by now because he's a Padawan. No, that's not true. He wasn't trained from birth, fucking almost birth, as a toddler in the Jedi Temple. He has a very different circumstance. He grew up alone. He was an orphan. At least Ahsoka had the people of the Jedi there to support her. And so that was another reason why I remember not liking this
episode. And Ahsoka was in like the Jedi Order and like the religious the religious order, and then like a military order too at the same time. So she she's had a very ordered life. And when she was in war, it was in a very military context, whereas he's having adventures with his family, you know?
Yeah. And, like, I remember watching this episode for the first time going, like, man, if Ahsoka was acting like this, she would have to suck it up and go into battle anyway, or Anakin would be like, check your feelings and stuff. And so that was, number one, the mistake I've learned how to stop doing was...
Yeah, Ezra and Ahsoka learned all those lessons when she was 7, you know?
Yeah, like, Ahsoka and Ezra are not the same person. They should not be compared together, except for maybe, like, the very basics of, like, yeah, they're Jedi and they do these differently. And then the second thing is that Anakin and Kanan are very different people. Anakin would have told her to suck up her feelings and go into battle, regardless of how she was feeling. Kanan is the one that's going, are you okay?
Right, right.
And those are two very different approaches to their masters. And, like... And where Ahsoka would have to bury her feelings and just be like, oh, is this mental stability? I don't know. He's letting Ezra feel and process. And while it's not always the most exciting for us two adult watchers watching a teenager feel, it's actually very necessary for Ezra's character. And it's what allows him to process these emotions about his parents and about Empire Day, for him to open up to Sebo at the end and for the future story. So it actually does really work very well. Because I think that's a great nod towards Kanan and the kind of master he is.
I figure Kanan is like, the Jedi Order's gone. I'm not training a Jedi as much as I'm training him to cope. You know.
And, you know, Kanan was about Ezra's age when the Purge happened, so I bet he went through this as well, in a way.
I mean, best case scenario, Kanan's hoping to keep him from the dark side.
Yeah, and, like, Kanan probably went through a lot of what Ezra was feeling, because he was about Ezra's age when the Purge happened. So
right.
He knows
he
that
never,
kind
he
of
never
loss.
He never got to become a Jedi anyway, so...
Yeah, and honestly, Kanan's not the best example. He ran away, became a smuggler, and got drunk a lot and fucked a lot of girls. I mean, Kanan's been through that. So
okay, sounds like a good example to me. I don't know.
So I'm sure Kanan was like, well, as long as you're not knocking up girls and getting drunk, you're doing great, kid. Yeah. So I'm sure Kanan's just like, that's fine. Just don't knock someone up like I probably did. I probably have an entire Luke school of new Padawans across the galaxy I don't know about. I love that joke of, like, Kanan actually secretly has all these illegitimate children because he fucked his way across the galaxy. And they're all going to show up one day and be like, hi, Dad. He's going to be like, oh, God, there's 30 of you. And then he's like, oh, my God, I can start my own Padawan school.
No, we probably all got it. We probably saw them all get killed in The Last Jedi. They were probably all those guys in the red outfits, Kylo Ren's guards or Snoke's
sad.
Guards.
Stop it. Don't make it sad, Chris. But that's really all I have for Act 1.
Act 1 was the biggest act for me, I thought. Like, had the most to it.
Yeah, everything else was a lot of action.
Yes.
I have a couple notes here and there, but for the most part, everything from here on out is kind of more shallow notes. So, Act 2?
Act 2.
Now we're at Empire Days Parade. We're all the very every what? What did I write? Oh, we're now at the Empire Day Parade, where it's all very every military parade that you've ever seen on TV in history, and in the present. It's a military parade. That's what I was trying to write there.
It looks very much like the Soviet Cold War military parades that they used to have.
Yeah. My baby girl, Minister Tua, who is just so wonderful this episode, is watching the parade with Commodore Oresko. And Oresko is pleased that he was in charge of the quote-unquote spectacle, as he calls it. And for the first time in this episode, we're about to see it multiple times throughout the episode, Minister Tua turns into a suburban mom in a shopping mall, demanding to speak to the manager, and she's that kind of type of personality. And she's like, it's not a spectacle, and if you keep this up, you can't sit with us on Wednesdays we wear pink. And Tua gives a rousing speech where she speaks for Governor Price, who is currently in the Thrawn novel right now, hanging out on Coruscant, so tying it back to the Thrawn novel. And Agent Kallus is in the crowd looking for SIBO, while other Imperials are bullying people into celebrating. And the Rebels are in the crowd too, and they split up to start their operation. Tua presents a brand new model of TIE Fighter, and Baron Ruder, who has popped up here and there so far in the season, is supposed to fly it. Meanwhile, Sabine hands Zeb a beeping bomb and tells him to wait throwing it. And Zeb is like, Sabine, it's beeping at me! Can I throw it now? I'm gonna lose my hands! I have adorable fuzzy hands! Ah! And Sabine gives the signal, and Zeb throws it, and it sets off some fireworks. And my baby girl, spelled with a U, my baby girl, Tua, is very impressed with the fireworks. And Oresko's like, this wasn't my idea! Yay! And with all the distraction, Kanan sneaks over to the TIE Fighter and sticks a bomb on it. But when he's caught by a stormtrooper, Kanan goes into his full impression of the dude, and he's like, whoa, man, the colors of the, what's that rainbow thing called? Oh, a rainbow, man, the colors, woo, I love Empire Day.
I think they were really referencing the double rainbow guy from that video, that viral video.
I think that might have came out before this. Double rainbow.
It was around that time. Double rainbow all the way, man.
When did it come out? Oh my gosh, we're now taking a very side trip.
I'm pretty sure this came out after Double Rainbow.
Oh, 2010. So yeah, it did come out after Double Rainbow. So
I think that was their tribute to Double Rainbow, dude.
And Kanan acts really drunk off his ass. And Ezra pops up going, oh, gee whiz, Space Dad. He's my real dad. He's real drunk with the patriotic love of the Empire. And the stormtrooper's like, that's cool. I love the Empire too. And they sneak away just as the bomb goes off and it blows up the TIE Fighter. And my precious baby Tua then goes full suburban mom and starts yelling, who is responsible for this? I am dirty and my hat is bent and I want to speak to the manager, even though she's the manager. And the Rebels flee with the scared crowd, and they look back and they see Kallus. And Zeb takes out his bow rifle and he goes, oh, if Kallus wasn't my boyfriend in 3 more seasons, I would totally shoot him right now. And Kanan goes, no, you need to shoot that sexy man in the crowd. And he points to where the Grand Inquisitor, Mr. Grande himself, struts out of the fire and the smoke. And Zeb takes the shot at Grande and misses, but he gets Grande's attention, and the Rebels run away into the city. And they call into Hera, but she can't pick them up at the moment because all the streets are blocked. Which I didn't get because she's flying? I guess she can't land in the streets is what they meant to say, but she's in the ship, and I don't see why they can't just climb to a roof and she just picks them up off the roof, but I don't know. And they split up, with Zeb heading towards Hera and Kanan taking Ezra and Sabine to a place for them to hide until things calm down. Meanwhile, Tua is full suburban mom again, and this time screaming at Kallus and Grande, who are both like, why is this tiny woman yelling at me? It's not our fault. And Grande literally rolls his eyes, and I had to laugh at it. And Tua wants answers now! But Callus says that their priority is finding the Rodian, which means that Sibo is super important somehow. And Ezra takes Kanan and Sabine to a boarded up house. And the chip thing that he got from his radio tower in the first act that I mentioned is actually a key. And he slides it into the building and the door opens. And Kanan realizes that this was Ezra's childhood home. But Ezra is acting all Batman, going, "My parents are dead! But not really!" And they go inside, and Ezra reveals a secret bunker built under what looks like an ottoman. And there's Sibo, crying in a ball. And Sibo climbs up, and he has on his head the same cyborg construct, just like Lobot wears in the original trilogy. And Kanan is like, "Whoa, it's that dude that everyone's talking about." And Sibo then walks face first into a wall. And Ezra says that Sibo was a friend of his parents. And Sabine explains that lower level technicians wear the Lobot things to give up their personalities for production. And Ezra is super protagonist-y about how his parents aren't actually dead. They were arrested by the Empire and taken away. And Kanan's like, oh, so you, like, still have a real dad somewhere. And I just guess I can't be your space dad anymore. Cool. And Sibo is rambling in Huttese. And Sabine is like, whoa, I understand Huttese. He knows where all the Imperial fighter deployments are in Lothal. And she starts hacking into Sibo's brain. And Kanan does an amazing thing for a Jedi. He looks at Ezra and goes, "Are you okay?" And Ezra sulks off into the bunker. And Sibo then states that Empire Day is Ezra's birthday. Today! And no one got him cake or presents! And everyone's like, "Well, that sucks for Ezra." What'd you think of Act 2?
It was pretty good. Now, was it just me? Or did you not think that those fireworks should have, like, made a goofy picture of Palpatine or something? I thought they were going to somehow, like, do fireworks and then spell out, you know, "The Empire blows chunks" or something like that.
Well, no, because they were trying to make it a distraction. So if
that would have been a distraction.
Well, the thing is, they wanted to try to probably get out of there before after the tie exploded. So
it was all set up, though, because, like, the one guy, the one guy, I don't know, the district manager Imperial guy who's great, like, he's got the great sickly pasty.
Oh, that's Oresko.
All skin.
That's Oresko, Commandant Oresko.
Yeah, like he takes credit for the fireworks, and it would have been even better if he took credit for them, and then all of a sudden, like, they spelled out something negative. That would have been a great moment where she was like, because she's like, "Oh, I'm impressed." He's like, "Oh yeah, I meant to do that," and then it would have been like, you know, Darth Vader's pants falling down or something, you know. That's sort of where I thought it was going. This has the one, like, sort of, you know, working towards the future. Well, Ezra's parents is definitely working towards future plot, but that, you know, a little more of the plans of using Lothal as a place to build TIE fighters comes up in this. But it's just a little side sort of thing. The one thing I got out of this
is just to tie onto that, a lot of that's covered in the Thrawn novel. Go on.
The thing that bothered me about this part is, all right, Sibo's Ezra's friend, and he's like
his parents' friend.
Huh?
He's his parents' friend.
But he's sort of a connection to the past and stuff. But there's just very little empathy from anybody for Sibo, you know? It's not like, "Oh my God, look at this poor guy. They grafted something onto his head."
About that in Act 3.
He's just an incoherent doof, and they're just sort of like, "Oh, well, come along, Sibo." You know, they're just sort of like they're just kind of using him like he was the enemy or something, you know. There's not a lot of empathy for him, which is really strange, because, like you said, you had Kanan asking Ezra how he is, but why isn't Ezra asking, you know, Sibo how he is? He's instantly kind of terse with him and, like, annoyed with him for being so weird, but it's obvious he's weird because he's got some hellish thing wired into his brain.
It's a situation like in Droids in Distressed, where they use their code names around R2 and 3PO because they thought they were Imperial droids. So maybe there's something where they're not sure, like, SIBO would give them up or have some connection. But yes, I do agree that, like, that's a very valid point. That's just me trying to make an some kind of
experience. Yeah, I was thinking that too. But it's still like, even if he was a risk, he's still his friend at some level, you know. It's like, but they don't seem to have a lot of concern.
I think a lot of this episode is also like Ezra not wanting to focus on his past. So like when it comes to SIBO, it's just a painful memory for him. Because we'll talk about it like right in the beginning of Act 3, where he hears Force visions of SIBO talking to his parents. And I think it's just all this whole entire thing is him just not wanting to face his past. So if he's, you know, if he's mean to SIBO, not empathetic for him, he doesn't have to face those memories.
Yep. But that's all I got for part one.
The majority of my notes are shallow. So I love the Imperial Parade music. It's wonderful. It's so upbeat and fun. It's like dun 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 dun. I love. Good job, Kevin Kiner. I love the Imperial Parade march. I love Kanan acting drunk and cheering for the Empire. And like Ezra just shows up and plays right along. Like that's actually probably one of my favorite parts of this entire episode, when Kanan's just like, look at the colors. I love the Empire. Woo! I love that entire moment. That entire bit is wonderful.
There's still such blatant scenery chewing actors whenever they pretend stuff.
When they pretend stuff, it's some of the best parts of the show, because we loved it in Droids in Distress too.
Droids in Distress, they were a little better at it. They were a little less obvious, but a lot of times, like, especially Ezra, you know, just like, oh yeah, that's my name, not Ezra Bridger.
Yeah, well, that was the one where he was in the academy, but like Droids in Distress is when they were all on the train or the shuttle or whatever. But I wish they don't do it as much in the later seasons, and I actually kind of miss that a lot in the later seasons where they get to play these like dumb roles. So I'm definitely enjoying it now. Oh my God, Tua is so wonderful in this. She is such like a like suburban mom yelling at like the manager of like, I don't know, of an Oshkosh Bagosh store because her kid didn't get the right shoes.
See, I almost see her like as like the district manager of Walmart coming in for the opening of a store and they screw it all up.
And she's like, why won't everything to be perfect? Like, she's screaming at the Grand Inquisitor, who's probably one of the most powerful men in the Empire. And he just has this look of like, why is this tiny human woman yelling at me? I could kill her in half a second with my lightsaber. Why is she yelling at me? I love it. And then like, Kallus is like, we need to focus on the Rodian. She's like, no, my Empire Day. I love every time Tua spoke in this episode. I just was laughing because she's just the angry, like, there's a great like picture from Clone Wars of it's from the.
She's confident in her authority. You know, she outranks that guy. He could rip her apart, but if he did, that would be the end of his career.
She doesn't, though. She doesn't. Inquisitor outranks her. The Inquisitorius is like up there. Like the only people that are above the Inquisitorius is Vader and Palpatine. Like they're like their own like secret police. They're kind of like this kind of just like because I was reading about this a little bit today in regards of Constantine, who I think we meet next week. And like when the Inquisitor is on his ship, he has to listen to the Inquisitor, but he doesn't like it. He doesn't like anything with the Force. And so like they actually have higher command. I think they still need to be have to be respectful, because like Tua is still a high ranking person. So like they would have to like get along with like her or Tarkin. But I think it's like the difference between like the military and the army, or kind of, or like, I guess a politician and say like a member of the FBI. Like, I think that's a much better comparison. Like if it was like a senator and an FBI agent, they listen to different people. And if push came to shove and somebody was like attacking a building, the FBI agent would like take over, because I believe that the Inquisitor is Alan Tua, and she's still screaming at him, which makes me laugh at her. No matter what, whether it's a good guy or a bad guy, everyone loves fireworks.
Yeah, even by the fourth George Romero zombie movie, we learned that even zombies love fireworks. How can you go wrong?
I know, everybody loves
fireworks. What kind of monster must you be?
This is my big note, and this is my my annoying thing of the episode that bothers me. So I know, and I'm very aware, that people are born every day of the year. But there is a trope in media and literature, and this is especially a big thing in anime, where people are somehow always born on holidays. And it's called the significant birth date trope. And it's because creators can pick their characters' birthdays, they're more than likely going to pick a significant day to tie in the plot. And just to give you a couple of examples of this, the Weasley twins, who are the funny, joking guys of Harry Potter, are born on April Fool's Day. A lot of times, characters will be born on Christmas, or if it's a romantic story, especially in anime, they're born on Valentine's Day. Captain America from Marvel is born on the 4th of July. So this is a very prominent trope, especially in anime, but it comes into like all sorts of media as well. And I grew up watching anime, and so it's a trope that I've always been very aware of growing up, of like, oh, of course so-and-so is born on Valentine's Day. So when it was revealed that Empire Day was also Ezra's birthday, I had to sigh and roll my eyes a little bit because, of course, he's born on Empire Day.
At least he's not the chosen one.
But he's the entire protagonist, and he's so protagonist-y in this entire goddamn episode. And, like, I've forgiven a lot of it, like, knowing a lot of, like, the context. But the fact that he's born on Empire Day is just another layer of him being super protagonist-y in this episode. Because, of course, his birthday is on Empire Day.
All right, now you sound like the old Hope talking about Ezra.
Oh, of course he's born on Empire Day, because he had to be. Like, he couldn't be born on any other day of the goddamn year. It just had to be on the very day that the Jedi Purge happened, and Kanan's having his worst day ever, and then the Emperor's like, I'm gonna start an empire, and everyone's like, that's cool, and meanwhile, Mira Bridger is shooting him out of her vagina. Of course he's born on Empire Day. And a lot of the, and it's not even really Ezra's fault, I just really dislike that trope. I think it's a really overused trope. Why God can't be people born on, like, May 4th? I don't know.
It was not necessary for this story, really.
Exactly. Who cares? Like, this entire episode would work if it wasn't Ezra's birthday. It doesn't have to be Ezra's birthday. He could still just be really upset because Empire Day could just bring up bad memories for him.
Empire Day was the day they took his parents away.
Yeah, it didn't even have to be that. Maybe it's just Empire Day. It's just a bad day for him.
Reminds him of the Empire who took his parents away and took over his planet. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, it could have been, like, it's just something that's always bothered me. It bothers me that the joking Weasley twins are, of course, born on April Fool's Day. Captain America's born on the 4th of July. The one I think about a lot is one of my favorite yaoi animes, Sakaicha Hatsukoi. The main love interest is born on Christmas, so then he has to, like, his love interest has to panic and get him both a birthday and a Christmas present.
No, he had plenty of reason to be grumpy because he found out about SIBO and it was making him go back to his old home and dredge up memories. It doesn't, you know, just making it on his birthday is just pushing it, you know?
Yeah, and it's just, and a lot of it, it's not Ezra's fault. I just really don't like this trope. And growing up watching anime, like, pretty much every anime character has a very significant birthday.
Ezra doesn't get to write his story. Didn't Pablo Hidalgo write this episode?
Henry Gilroy.
Henry Gilroy wrote this episode. Okay.
I don't think Pablo Hidalgo has actually ever written an episode.
Is a writer? Okay.
I think he's just an overseeing producer guy. But don't quote me on that. I don't know 100% for sure. Watch him write the next episode. I'm just going to be like, But I really hate that trope. It's just, It's an Orin High School Host Club. It's in Fushigi Yugi. It's in Sailor Moon. It's in pretty much like all of my favorite shows growing up, in anime especially. Like it's a prominent trope, and I hate that trope. I really do. Had to be born on Empire Day because of course he did. That's kind of funny though. Like Mira Bridger goes into labor and there's a republic and she comes out of labor and there's an empire and she's like, oh, what happened? She's like, what did that baby do?
It's all Ezra's fault.
Oh. Anyway, that's all I have for Act 2. I just had to gripe a second.
All right, Act 3.
Act 3. Hold on, I need to put on chapstick. Bop. It's that time of year where it's cold as dry as hell. My lips are all angry at me. Oh man, though, my hands have been like lizard hands. Like I hate wearing lotion for one. Like I hate the feeling of lotion, and it's grimy and it's slippery and it gets gross and it gets on everything. But now that it's the dead of winter,
Anakin.
If I don't put on lotion on my hands every night, my hands
gets
like
the hose again.
No, like my hands actually physically hurt when I wash my hands. Like I have
my eyeball, when it gets dry in the winter, my eyeballs get dry. The only time like my eyeballs feel, I should get like saline solution that like people with contacts use, because like when it gets below freezing and all the moisture leaves the air, like sometimes my lips will get dry, but it's always my eyeballs. The only time they ever feel like normal eyeballs is when I'm like in the shower and it's all steamy all over the place.
Yeah, but my lips get really, well, I have a very compulsive thing about chapstick.
You got your chapstick with you at all times, I know.
Yeah, it's a very compulsive, a lot of it just comes from me just being a smoker, so it gives my mouth something to do. But now that I don't smoke cigarettes anymore, like, I always have to have chapstick with me because I'm like, I have to have something on my face. So, Act 3. Down in the bunker where he's being sad, Ezra's being sad and stuff and angry. And he pulls the circle disc thing out of a box and starts hearing force visions again of Sibo talking with Ezra's parents. And Sibo chastises them for putting Ezra in danger. But Ephraim and Mira state that they want Ezra to learn how to fight the Empire and stand up for those in need. And Sabine snaps him out of it, and Ezra says that his parents used to do underground radio shows to speak out against the Empire. They go back upstairs, and Sabine has finished hacking into Sibo's brain. And he projects ship schematics and shows that the Empire has a 5-year plan for both Lothal and the Outer Rim. It's too important to let Sibo go, so they need to smuggle him off Lothal. And if they haven't caught him yet, it's because of Empire Day, but they're about to turn their full attention to looking for Sibo. And outside, they commandeer a troop transport and head out. Commandant Rusko is waiting on the highway for them, but Sabine guns it down the street, heading right for the Empire's blockade. And they exchange some shots, and Sabine rams her way through the blockade. But sexy Agent Kallus is following in his own troop tank, and Kallus and Grande are working together because they're coordinating attack of my heart. Because I was like, Kallus and Grande are talking to each other, and they're attacking my heart, and I love my voice. Oh, man, if Thrawn was there, too, I'd just die. Kallus, Grande, and Thrawn, I'd just die. Oh, my God. Anyway. It's a high-speed chase as the two speeder troop transports, two troopers on speeders is what I meant to say, so they're riding speeders. As two speeder troopers get onto our hero's ride, but Kanan throws them out, and Kallus is shooting up their tank with his tank. And Kallus jumps on top of his tank like a goddamn action star. And he jumps on the Rebels tank. And he's jumping everywhere. He's a jumper in this episode. Not in that way. Don't think that just got real dark. I'm sorry. Just as he's about to attack, he hears from above, "Hey, future boyfriend, what's up? Remember me?" And there's the ghost with Zeb on the ramp, on the back of the ghost. And he starts shooting at Kallus while Hera and Chopper focuses on the other tank. And Kallus looks like he falls off the back of the tank as Hera is setting up to pick up everyone from the sky, since they can't land because TIE fighters are coming. And Kanan gets on the roof and pulls up Sibo, and Hezra, Ezra and Sabine follow. They all clamber up and they start boarding the ghost. And Kallus jumps up and he's all like, "Haha!" and he starts fighting them. But Kanan blocks it with his lightsabers. And then Kanan does an awesome Jedi jump and lands on the ghost as it's pulling away. And Kallus calls in the ghost to Mr. Grande, and they chase. And Grande makes a shot, hits the ghost, which also takes out Chopper, because Chopper was manning the gun, and Chopper's just like, wah, 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 and he gets shot, and he falls over. And as everyone is taking up their gunner positions, the ghost gets hit again, and Ezra goes, "Whoa!" and he falls, and he stumbles, and he lands on top of Sibo, and he smushes him into the couch. And Sibo is all like, "Ah!" and then he gets his programming all messed up. And then finally, because Ezra pancaked him into the couch, Sibo is finally in his right mind again. And he's like, "Oh my god, Ezra! Ezra Bridger!" And then he starts talking in Hutsies, and he grabs Ezra, and he says he knows what happened to Ezra's parents. To be continued! Bum, bum, bum.
Man, they get a lot of mileage out of this road. I remember that about the first time watching it. We see a lot of this road that leads out of town. That being
they really
said,
do, because I actually remember these highways pop up in later episodes of season two.
That being said, it's a really cool chase. I like how they're using the troop transports, which were a toy.
Actually, I like the lights in the tunnels, like the lighting of this. And like you have like the green light and the red ones just to like show like which way to go. It always reminds me of like when you're driving down the street at night and then you go through a very well-lit tunnel and you're just like, ah, I'm blind. Like it's all really lit very well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Callus pulls a total Mad Max in this by looking like he fell off and he's really gripped onto the front. I like the Inquisitor's armor.
Ooh, I have a note about that.
It's very cool. My only other notes are Chopper pulls off a modern 20th century thing, very similar to Chewbacca doing the Tarzan yell, where he does a ba-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Although he doesn't get to say charge, but he gets to go da-da-da-da-da. And it's our first cliffhanger episode.
Yeah, I actually forgot it was a cliffhanger. And so I got to the end, I was like, there's 2 minutes left. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, that's all I got, though.
My first note is, I like that we get some of the Force visions of Ezra's parents. They sound like they were pretty cool people with their underground radio show.
Yeah, I like underground radio shows.
Yeah, and, you know, I started thinking about it. I'm like, man, it'd been really cool if we got to actually see them in action. But then I realized, like, it would have to be either, like, a Force vision or some kind of flashback, like, something that was very, like, tropey or out there and stuff like that. So on second thought, I'm glad that we got what we did. And I think it's also kind of interesting that they're like, that Sivo of all people was like, you're putting Ezra in danger. And they're like, no, it's fine. And of course, then we know that it ended up not being fine. So it goes kind of back to your note of Act Two, where, of course, probably Ezra was so young, he didn't know that Sivo was like, you're putting your kid in danger. But it does now kind of play off more a little bit mean of how they were treating Sivo when he was the one that was the voice of reason for the Bridgers.
Yeah.
So, I had to look it up. I like the TIE fighter that the Inquisitor has. It's like kind of folded up one. It's actually called a TIE Advance. I looked it up. And it's all folded up like a little ball and it's cute. And I also wrote that I like the entire high speed battle. It's really fun.
It was really fun.
I noticed that Kanan doesn't always keep his lightsaber in one piece at all times, which I at first thought was weird because it's that extra few seconds of him having to put it together that he could have got shot. But then I realized that's probably actually a very good thing that he keeps it separate, because if it looked like a lightsaber hanging on his hip at all time, it would be very obvious.
Yeah, it would bring a lot of attention. Yeah.
I also said that the Inquisitor's TIE fighter armor is awesome and amazing. And I actually texted Megan about it today when it came up. And I was like, and I wrote, I'm watching the episode for Empire Day for the podcast, and I completely forgot Grande has his badass armor to fly his TIE fighter. And Megan wrote me back, she wrote, oh, yeah, so cool. And I wrote back, like, holy shit, I saw him in his armor, and I about died. And Megan wrote back to me, you were so in love with him, he looks like a knight. And
he
I said,
look
I know,
like
he looks
knight.
Like an awesome knight, and he needs to have that armor around at all times.
Kind of like that evil knight in the Tartakovsky.
Whoa, yeah, because I'm looking at a picture of it right now, because I texted a picture of it to Megan. Yeah, he actually really does, because it has that kind of same visor that he has. I wonder if that was an inspiration. I didn't see any notes about it, though.
I think that knight guy had, like, earpieces, you know, like horns on it or something, but it was still sort of an elongated black knight head thing going on.
Yeah, with, like, a high neck, too. But, oh, my God, like, I saw that. I was like, oh, Grande. Can I tell you a very stupid thing that's hilarious?
Okay.
So this is a side note. It has nothing to do with the episode. But so Megan and I are role players. And right now we have a game that has the Grand Inquisitor in it. And we have given, because we never know his real name. We've never learned it. And so we gave him the name Alexei. And Alexei was the writer of some poem or short story back in the day called The Grand Inquisitor. And so we gave him the name Alexei. Well, for Christmas, Megan got one of those Alexa things. So whenever we're role-playing and we talk about it, she's just like, Alexei does this. And in the background, you can hear, I'm sorry, I don't understand. And Megan will go, shut up, Alexa.
Not talking to you.
It's every 5 minutes when I talk to her for like 2 hours. It's just like, blah, blah, and Alexei, I'm sorry, I don't understand. Shut up, Alexa. So, yeah. My next note is, oh my god, I love that Grand Inquisitor armor. Oh my god, Chris. My next note is, this episode is a bit better than I remember it, because a lot of it is, I understand what's going on with Ezra better, and I like Ezra better, and I don't fault Ezra for being moody in this entire episode, because he really is dealing with very heavy things and bad memories about his parents. Plus, it's his birthday, and no one got him presents, but he also didn't talk to anybody. But the thing is, like, he's also a teenager, and they're writing him very well as a teenager to act this way and be closed off. And I know we've talked about it, but, like, looking back on the episode as a whole, I think they actually wrote Ezra very well in this episode. He's written to be his age. He's written to be acting correctly. And everything in this episode makes sense, from the beginning when he can't connect with the Lothcat because he's upset, to wanting to be closed off to Zeebo, to wanting to be closed off to Sabine and Kanan when they're in his house. So the first time Ezra, I think, smiles in this episode is when they ram the blockade and he starts laughing, because he's back in his groove then. And even then, like, he goes up to Sibo and he's like, you're full of fun facts. Like, Ezra's feeling better by the end of this episode. And I think a lot of it is like him kind of having to work through those emotions, and he's starting to process those emotions, and he's starting to face those emotions. So while, like, I could see people being all down on Ezra, he's actually written incredibly very well this episode for his age.
Yeah, but that still doesn't mean that he's not annoying.
And I think a lot of it is, like, it's annoying for us as adults.
15-year-olds are annoying, man.
But imagine, like, being 7 and watching this, because then Ezra would seem so much cooler and older.
Right, right.
It's kind of the whole thing, like, when you watch Little Mermaid as a kid, and you're like, Ariel's so adult! And she's so amazing, and she should stand up for herself. But then you watch a little moment, Mermaid, when you're an adult, and you're like, you're 16, and you've known him for a day and a half. Sit down. God, I will, here you go, most controversial thing I'll say on this podcast all day. The Little Mermaid is my least favorite Disney princess, and I think Ariel is terrible.
Oh.
I really don't like Ariel.
That's a t-shirt. Ariel is terrible.
I like, she's my least favorite Disney princess, and I think she's terrible. And a lot of it goes back to the whole, like, she's 16 and she's known him for a day and a half. And she's all like, Daddy, I love him. And I'm just like, you're 16. Go for a swim.
Sounds pretty 16-year-old, yeah.
Yeah. So, but you know, even when I was a kid, I wasn't a fan of The Little Mermaid. Like, it was fine and it was okay and it was there. But, like, I've just never liked the, like, it's.
I've never seen it. How about that?
I appreciate it for its animation and what it was doing and the story, but I always go back to, she's 16 and she's all like, I love him, Daddy. And I'm like, shut up, Ariel. You're 16 years. Is it even legal for you to marry Prince Eric? I don't even know. What are fish laws?
A little sketchy. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this next one's kind of a double note, because I do think that they play Sibo a little bit too comically. Which we kind of noted in Act 2 when they were all being not really sympathetic to him and stuff. But, like, it really is very horrifying what the Empire has done to him. Because he's probably running into things not only because they messed up his brain, but I have to wonder if it's because he's away from his workstation. Like, he just doesn't know how to, like, process because he's not
connected. Yeah, he thinks he's in his office and he's walking. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. Like, that's absolutely horrifying. And, like, I've said it on the show before, like, the original trilogy is, like, not my favorite thing of Star Wars. I know that's probably the second most controversial thing I'll say on the show.
Well, you see, that's what I just wondered. They didn't seem to register as much horror as I would, that, like, seeing somebody I know and they're basically, their mind has been taken away from them and they've got some weird, like, thing attached to them, you know?
Yeah.
And you'd see it and be like, are they, you wouldn't know if they were ever going to be normal again or whatever. They could be basically destroyed, you know? But he was just sort of like, oh, Tebow, you're kind of an inconvenience.
Yeah. And so, like, what I was going to say was, I kind of always think of Lobot in the original trilogy. Like, he never really made an impression on me. Like, he was just kind of there with Lando and stuff like that. I didn't really start kind of thinking about Lobot in this context until it was the first Charles Soule comic in the new Marvel comics that it's running. They did a Lando 5-issue miniseries.
Yeah, and you find out what the nature of Lobot is. It's basically Lando fucked him up, and that's keeping him alive.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's also the first time that Lobot really had a personality. I have not read really any of Extended Universe or Legends. So for all I know, he could have been like an awesome war hero in Legends. But in the current canon, like, it's the first time he really had like a personality. And a lot of it is like he's gotten away from some of that programming, but we also see that programming is still very controlling of him. And so it just makes me think of SIBO. Like, it took Ezra smacking him onto the couch by accident for him to come to. And what they did to him is really horrifying. And I wish they kind of would have touched on it more.
Well, we'll see what they do next episode. Maybe they might next episode.
Yeah. Well, that's all I have for this episode. Do you have anything else?
No, you want me to score it up?
Score it up, Chris.
I thought this was a really good episode. I gave it an 8.5. I think it had great action in it. And yeah, I generally liked everything about it.
For me, I think one of the reasons I like this episode as much as I did, which made me actually have to kind of stop and take my score down a little bit, is a lot of fan stuff came out of this episode. One is being like, there's a prominent feature, a prominent post on Tumblr with Tua screaming at Kallus and the Grand Inquisitor, and like them just being like, why is this tiny woman yelling at me? So there's a lot of little things in this episode that I enjoy because of like the fandom stuff that came from it. So I kind of had to stop and like look at the episode away from the fandom stuff because it really made me appreciate certain things more because I was like, aha, I saw that joke on Tumblr. That's funny. So when I stopped and actually looked at the episode, I did like it a lot more than the first time I watched it. I have a lot more of an appreciation and understanding of Ezra. It was so much fun just watching Tua, Kallus, and Grande all working together, and it gives me life, and I love them. And I especially love Tua this week around because she's just screaming at everyone, and it's wonderful, and I just kept laughing at her. But the thing that probably brought this down for me the most is how tropey they made Ezra. And I don't mind that he's having feelings. I don't mind that he's like remembering his parents. But they did so much stuff in the most tropey way possible and like fell back on so many of those that it didn't need to be done. Like the birthday thing didn't need to be done. The episode would have still worked the exact same fucking way if it wasn't Ezra's birthday. And it's just this kind of like extra layer, just like, oh, and it's his birthday. So it's all really done well, and it's written well, and the battle's there, and Kanan's hilarious, and it's solid, and I like it, but those tropes had to make me go, and me stepping away from, like, the fandom jokes that I'm fully aware of for this episode, so I had to kind of look at that, and it's those little things that kind of brought it down for me, because originally I had it at an 8, and I just thought that was just a touch too high, so I gave it a 7.75.
Not bad, still solid.
It's still solid, but I think a couple up. My other 8s I was looking at like were actually much more. Were pretty much written the exact same way, minus the tropes. And to me, I think they. I don't want to say it was lazy, because it's certainly not lazy, because it's a very well done episode. But there's just so many things, especially around Ezra's writing, that just didn't need to be there. So, Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode covering Droids in Distress. And I must explain, actually, I'll let you explain it to you, Chris, because I found this hilarious and I laughed at it for way too long.
Yeah, this is an audio podcast, but this is a response to a picture, but I'll do my best to...
And just so you know, it's talking about the disruptors, and in the episode Droids in Distress, they were talking about what the disruptors did to Zeb's people. So.
And Aaron Henley says, here's my visualization of what a disruptor does to organic tissue, and it's, of course, a tomato just splashed against the wall, and that's probably about right, yeah?
Yeah.
It probably just turns organic matter to liquid.
You know what time it is.
And just splatter on everything. It is candy time.
We forgot to decide. Last time I think I picked it, so I think you should pick it this time.
Oh my god, there's so much. I just kind of want to pick something off the top. I have the Coco's Selfie. It's a long black one, a brown one. It's a Coco Soleil. It feels like a whopper.
what's it called? Cocoa Cell?
Yeah, the Cocoa Cell.
Nestle Cocoa Cell. I found it.
Okay. Well, if you don't know,
it does look wafer based. It's very light.
Well, if you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats and thinks they're dumb, and they don't like him either, and they have a war every week. And so our friend Dario is a flight attendant, and he sends us candy from all over the world. He's also Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It. And this week, and we review it on the show. And this week it's the Cocoa Cell, and it comes from Bogota, Colombia.
And it is a wafer. It's a really long ass wafer.
Two long ass wafers.
It says it has chocolate and coconut cream in it.
I was about to say, I can smell coconut in it. I can definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm taking mine out now. It's very crumbly.
Mmm. Oh, it's good.
It's very light.
It reminds me, it has a very light coconut taste, like those. They're basically like Nilla wafers, but they have coconut in them.
Yeah, I'm definitely not getting the chocolate. I'm definitely getting a lot of the coconut, though.
They're both very light. It's very light and not super sweet either, which I love.
Yeah, I like it too. I'm just trying to figure out where the chocolate in it. Like, where's the cocoa?
It's very thin layer, I think.
I don't even taste. Oh, I'm dropping it! Come back!
Yeah, it's not as chocolatey as usually wafer stuff is. It's as a matter of fact, it's not even coated with chocolate. It's just plain wafer on the outside.
Yeah. Well, I guess I can kind of see the chocolate in between. But this is delicious. Thank you, Dario. We love you.
Mm.
Well, do you have anything else about the episode?
No, that's about all I got.
Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our podcast. By this time, there probably will be a brand new Avengers podcast, but not the Avengers that you're thinking of. We're talking about the Emma Peel Avengers, the Patrick McNee Avengers, the British spy show. And I'd love to give you the title of the show, but it's so long I cannot remember it. But it's with the legendary Thomas DJ and Scott McGregor. And they'll be covering every episode of The Avengers. So that's been sort of long awaited. But anyway, you can go to Two True Freaks and sign up for the RSS feed for any of our podcasts. You can sign up for them at iTunes also and leave us a review. We are also on Facebook. We have a Facebook page called Two True Freaks that just has our podcasts on them. People talking about our podcast. We got the Two True Freaks Cantina, which is our meeting place to just talk about general nerd stuff. We've got a Twitter page, Two True Freaks at Twitter, run by Gene, the podcasting machine.
I'm still eating my wafer. I just shoved the very last bite in my mouth when you were like, it's Gene.
Should have seen it coming.
I was trying to eat as fast as I could, and I shoved the last one in, and then you're like, it's Gene, and I was like, I have food in my mouth. Oh God.
But I think that's all for me. What about you? Where can they find you?
Oh, I need to drink down this wafer. Oh, there we go. Hi. You can find me at Jacobs and Jedi. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Mullinax on Twitter. I also have a website called geekygirlexperience.com. I'm currently working on an article. I started it yesterday, so I hope it should be out by the time this comes out. But it's pretty much an article saying, looking at episodes like Fight or Flight and the episode The Platform Classic from Resistance, and talking about how, like, something the television shows do so well is they can work on smaller conflicts, because the movies are movies and they're supposed to be these big spectacles. And so everything in it is like a Death Star level of conflict, and there's a Death Star or a Starkiller base. But I was talking about the reason why I like the television show so much is not everything is a Death Star. Sometimes you can just have an episode where Ezra and Zeb steal a TIE fighter. You can have an episode of Resistance where Yeager has to face his brother and work on that conflict. And so it was pretty much an article talking about, like, that's what I think the TV shows do so well. So hopefully it should be up by now. I wrote the rough draft yesterday. I just didn't get a chance to look at it today. So you can find that at geekygirlexperience.com. I'm also a fan fiction writer on Archive of Our Own. My story is called Forces of Gravity. It's a Thrawn fanfiction. I also beta read for Valkyrie Strike, which is my buddy Megan's fanfiction. And it's also a Thrawn fanfiction, though she has more of a Rebels Thrawn fanfiction, while I have more of a romance. So if you like cheesy-ass romances. There you go. Sorry. You know, that's fine. That's exactly how it feels sometimes. Cheesy-ass romance burping up. So, well, I guess next week we'll see how it all ends. I remember next week is a lot of my grande loves, so there's a lot of grande in it here. I'm very excited about all my grande next week, so I'm just going to have a grande time.
All right, we will see you guys then.
Guys, just prepare for lots of notes of me just salivating on things.
Well, it makes those wafer candies go down easier, too, when you're salivating anyway, so.
That's very true. All right, guys, see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye. This is a really good wafer.
It is.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."